Welcome back to Labeled, the stories, rumors, and legends of Tooth & Nail Records. I'm your host, Matt Carter, and today we get the chance to talk about a whole bunch of people in the Labeled universe, but through the perspective of Seth Roberts. And his band, Watashiwa, is back and doing big things, as you may have noticed. Watashiwa has a new album out on Tooth & Nail, on which they've done some awesome collaborations, some really cool stuff that we'll talk about in the episode today. But not only do they have an album coming out, but they're also on the West Coast leg of Labeled Fest. And also, Seth's working on the art team to do all the tour visuals and the design work, and doing a great job with that. So I'm very happy to finally have Labeled Fest announced and on sale, and I'll give you a little of the backstory of how we got here, and that is that last year's Labeled Fest was an official pre-party show of Furnace Fest, and it was sold out, and it was a blast. Brandon Ebel was there, except for he left for a little while and went down the street in walking distance to the Norma Jean show, which was also sold out. So that whole weekend just made it clear how much value is created when people work together and you get this high density of meaningful stuff going on in one place. So this year, when we were able to get some holds on some rooms and some venues when things were opening up, so I just started texting, you know, previous guests of this podcast to see who might want to make something cool happen. And right away, things just started making sense. When the agent took to the promoters the stuff, the packages we had in mind, they were also excited. They started trying to bump the rooms, get bigger rooms and switch dates and that kind of stuff. So as of now, we got Norma Jean, Emery, Aaron Gillespie. He's doing the Almost Southern Weather from front to back. Oh Sleeper, Watashiwa. And we got newer Tooth & Nail artists, Salt Creek and Idle Threat. And not all of those bands are on all the dates. And there's still going to be other bands probably announced and new cities and possibly regions added as well, because the whole thing's kind of fun and it's just unfolding as we go and based on what we can make work. And there's just a lot of other possibilities out there and stuff I think that will continue to come from it. So we're just going to keep doing the same thing, and I'm so glad everyone is stoked, and you can get tickets now at labeleduniverse.com. Anyway, I've known Seth since the very first Tooth & Nail tour in 2004, and he's always been a great connector of people and able to add to every environment that he's in, and that's led him to a rich set of experiences and relationships, and I love getting to discuss that with him, and I know you'll love the conversation too. You know, I have this condition called podnesia where I don't remember what I talk about on previous podcasts. So I just am more interested in looking at Seth again today through the lens of what I'm kind of curious about in this collaborative way. So do you mind if we just go all the way back and look at you and your career some? And, you know, was this always, what is this way with you when you first found music and collaboration with people? What's the earliest way you remember that being part of your identity?
Yeah. Well, I think from the start of our band, you know, we started so young. A lot of our inspiration for starting the band was our guitar player back then. We're not starting the band, but I think like getting the band really going, you know, like where we started to think, oh, we can go play shows like this, or we can go, was, you know, our Mike, our old guitar player, his brother was in a band called Noggin to Boggin, and they were older than us. We shared a practice spot with them. And we kind of, from the start, were collaborating in a way and influencing each other. And so I also saw the value with that. You know, they kind of like big brothered us in a way and brought us along and brought us into shows. And we signed with the same label that they signed with our first label, Betty Rocket Records, that we put out a couple albums on. And so I think even back then there was a little of that just collaboration always happening, you know, with shows coming, people bringing people out on stage, or, you know, friends or whatever. And I've always just, I think the things that got me into music were the connection that I could relate to the bands and what they were singing about and put myself in that. And I have, I think, that perspective too of like feeling connected to the music. It's not just about the individual that wrote the music. It's about so much more. Music, a song is bigger than the individual that brings it into the world. You know, I think God God has a plan for music. And so, and music is powerful. It connects people, you know? And so the, I think from the start of these songs, and I think realizing, oh, these songs sound like Wetashiwa music. I really did want to involve, kind of like the community that felt like, connected to Wetashiwa, and as many people as I could kind of get involved, you know, I thought it would just be so cool to have, like I said, bringing more, making the music more dynamic by people offering what they had to the songs, you know. And I just love collaboration. I think, like, I love, you know, when other bands or other fans that I, other bands that I really love, when they connect, you know, like two artists collaborate together. I love that. And it's so exciting as a fan of artists like that. So I just, I thought it would be so special to, like, you know, just try to involve as many people in our community and friends from other bands. Like I said, you know, people that meant a lot to the history of Wetashiwa and kind of felt like were part of the fabric of who we are. And yeah, I think, if I look back on what means so much about making the music over the years and bringing those songs in, I guess, into the world by touring and everything, it's all about connection. It's all about the connections of the bands that we were touring with and the friendships that we made and the people that we met. That's what made all that so meaningful, really. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what brings life to all those, to all that music.
There's something really weird about music in that way, and people talk about it in different ways at different times, and it almost sounds woo-woo, and you're saying God has a purpose for music, or you bring it into this world. And I was just listening to you on Black Sheep podcast, which I just love, love, love when they talk to people. But I think they're great fans and a great podcast. But then I have these other ways of, like, hearing that and then thinking what it makes me want to talk about. And you were talking about that in that podcast too, how it comes, you're on that same thought. And I just wanted to hear more about that. So what does that really mean? If you didn't have to be embarrassed or technical or talk about, like, what do you really think is the mystical thing happening there? Like, you bring the music across, like, what is that?
It is interesting. Yeah. I mean, I do believe there's a spiritual component to it. You know, I believe that we all have, gifts in that. And I know all this stuff can kind of sound spiritual or woo-woo or, you know, real, but I think there's definitely something real to it. You know, it's like, I listen to the music and I see a reflection of something much bigger than me. And I think in those moments, there's an inspiration happening that feels like not conscious, you know, like you're not thinking about these things and coming to them like, oh, this is what it is. It's almost like, that's why I say magic, because it's magic. It's like, how do you summarize that? You know, it's like, you have a moment, like a 2 minute moment where then a song is just, you know, kind of there, like, and pretty much like, And then what that is and how much that can come to life. And
that discovery, though, I mean, it feels so discovery language or like special in a way that sounds, it's at least mystical or magical, but it feels so weird to talk about because the main paradigm people usually discuss it in is this very intentional, brilliant artist who's just decided to express himself the way, and it just came out, and he just knew what, because he said, or she said, I'm doing, this is right. what I'm going to, but it, the experience when it, isn't really that way, or
so
for
messy.
Me, it's not either.
Yeah, it's so you don't feel like you're the messy. Yeah,
you lose the it's like is an illusion that you're even the author of it. If it, right. it feels like it comes.
Yeah,
and it's so that's weird.
Yeah, it is weird, and it is it can be humbling. It can be also something that you know you can find pride in and kind of put yourself in if and almost lie to yourself like it became something that it wasn't really, you know, like, because if I'm honest with myself, all of those moments are so messy and not planned and not intentional. And like, you know, I just got out of the shower and I'm got this and I'm like, oh, this is cool. You know, like, and the next thing you know, it's like, wow, that's great. I'm feel so yeah. thankful, you know, like, and
like
in
you
awe,
stumbled into
like,
it and now you're yeah. like, oh, I got to capture this idea because then I can take credit for this idea I stumbled upon or something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but
yeah.
you're going to take credit for it. It's like, oh, but I found it though. I found
yeah.
it. So now all I got to do is show it to people, but then they think I did it, but all I did was find it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, a lot of my kind of discoveries are just on my phone recorder, you know, a little moment or whatever, driving or just some, you know, like I said, a messy little, but that's, I just feel so thankful because like I said, I don't feel, smart enough to make what we're making or, you know, it's like, it's so, it just feels like, wow, we get to be part of this. That's so cool. You know?
Yeah. Part
that's
of something bigger. And
bigger,
so that's,
yeah.
and that's just inherently the notion of spirituality, like just the, that you're connected to something bigger or something. And then, you know, you go farther and you say God has a purpose. Like what's that part of it?
Oh, that's interesting. Or, yeah. I think, well, I think, you know, that there's something about, you know, whether or not we want to be part of, something happening in the world. I think, in my belief, it doesn't really matter. It seems like what's happening, cultural impacts or movements are happening. And so I look at it like God wants, when I discover a song, it's like, I feel like, okay, that's what was supposed to happen. God wanted this to happen because it did happen. You know, like,
yeah.
I didn't cause it. So that's what I mean. I think there's reasons that music comes into the world and that whether it's a big or small impact, you know, it's like, someone said this, decorating the, like, the period of our time, you know, like, kind of taking that time and making it, time in history and making it look like and sound like and feel like what it is. And so we look back on, you know, early 2000s and there's a distinctive like sound and feeling and aesthetic to music and art and ideas in that time, big or small, you know, we have little movements or whatever. Maybe you're into like a smaller band or a bigger band, but it was all part of that, like what God wanted to do, I think, in that time, you know, just
movements.
Movements, yeah.
Have that same quality where there's not a one person that's authoring them.
Yeah.
Like a
I
song
think so.
Feels that
yeah.
way. It's like somehow collaborative with something. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
Sound, it's definitely woo-woo or spiritual,
it is,
though.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I think there's something, though, about even like looking at our bands collaborating together. You know, we're going on tour. We're doing things in a like-minded way, that it's like, well, yeah, if you listen to our music, like you wouldn't be like, oh, that's the cultural movement. You're putting that together, you know, but things are meant to happen for real. You know, it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's like these songs happen, the connections happen, these things happen. And then we look back on it in 10 years and we go, oh, that's why, you know, that yeah. meant a lot. And that was for a reason, you know,
Because the connections somehow translate to other people, because like you and I are connected, or our bands are connected, but that's, we're connected now in time. And then other people have those same connect. Like it's not that our bands sound alike. And that's one of the things that's the craziest about this movement that it's all about how the bands didn't sound alike, but there was the Supertones and the hardcore band and Watashiwa and Under Oath. It's like, so it only goes together because it goes together, but since it has gone together and now has a history together, it's real. It happened. Like it's something.
Did, yes.
So whatever it is, when you mix all that together, it turns out to be something somehow. Yeah. And so, and it's like unguided in a way.
Yeah. It's definitely,
or God makes every single thing happen either way. But you know what I mean? That's like,
Or we have, I think we also have like inspirations and dreams and visions, and there's people that do different things and different talents. That's what I'm saying is like, it's not, I just feel so thankful for the gift of music and that it's connecting us, and it does feel like God, from my perspective, wanted that, and it's usually when, I think things feel intentional the most to me, or like God, when it's like, or ease, an ease with like seeing almost that with your life, like with things being like just falling into place, or almost like coming naturally with, you know, in a way, it's usually focused in like with love, you know, like we're talking about connection and music connecting and collaboration and all of this. It's like, that's maybe where the ease of music comes naturally or whatever. But I don't know.
I appreciate you just exploring that with me, but that's just kind of how I encounter it, because it's like, there's something about it being across time that really gives the meaning another depth. And so, this reminds me of that time. So it's like, there's the thing where people say nostalgia or complain about nostalgia, but there's something much more deep that nostalgia is like a little byproduct. That thing, pop nostalgia, is like a byproduct of like, you know, connecting yourself and other connections across time in a way that does matter somehow.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So, and so you have been in this position across time to have connected with and collaborated with so many people in this scene and movement. I wanted to know what you've got, who are those people, and like specifically, let's talk about them, and that'll just lead us into talking about the music and everything. But if you go all the way back, you guys were in from San Luis Obispo, and in my mind, I have this region of this movement coming out of California that winds up connecting you and like Number One Gun, and I remember you coming up to Club Impact in Tacoma. So in my mind, it's like this West Coast emerging scene of all these different kinds of bands mixing together coming out of that. So who were you running into there? And did I see you at Club Impact with Copeland?
Yeah, we played. Yeah. That first US tour we did for both us and Copeland was together. You know, it was our first time, I think, going across the US as for both bands. We did it together. And I think we might've played Acceptance, played that show too.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I'm sure it is. In Seattle. That would make total sense. Yeah.
But yeah, or Tacoma. Yeah. Yeah.
So what was that whole scene? That is the West Coast Christian what scene? What was that to you at the time? Was it when it was happening?
I mean, it's such a cool thing to look back on. I think, you know, there was so much support within the church Christian community for this cool alternative punk music, you know. So from a young age, just discovering that I was allowed to listen to this music that was cool, and that there was a place that, you know, churches were having shows, and in our area, you know, we had a bunch of punk bands and hardcore bands popping up in our town, and then, you know, we're pretty much on the coast in between San Francisco and LA, directly in the middle. So pretty easy for us to get to San Francisco and LA. We would connect a lot with, you know, just the different bands, Tooth and Nail bands. I remember, you know, early on junior high, I think we played with Value Pack and like a bunch of those, you know. And then we were playing with Dogwood and stuff when we were in high school. Our first tour, you know, we signed with Betty Rocket, and a lot of the bands on Betty Rocket Records were in Bay Area. You know, Noggin to Boggin was from our area. So there was kind of these scenes in California. And then we would, I think my dad took us on our first little tour. We like rented a U-Haul and we play like churches up the West Coast, you know?
Yeah. So all churches, not all, but like there'd be a cool club or a crossover club, but yeah, just be Medford, Oregon, a church that something. You would go through there and people know each other, but it wasn't in the national, I don't even know. It was like a network of stuff.
Totally.
Right?
And it was so cool because most people knew the Tooth and Nail stuff and they knew, you know, they didn't necessarily know our band at first, but there was just such this excitement with the scene in general happening in all these areas that it's like, you could go to a new town out in the middle of nowhere. And just because they were excited about the scene, you know, Tooth and Nail and everything going on, they were just like hungry to hear your band. And so, yeah, we connected. Like I said, early on, we were playing like Tom Fest during mm-hmm. summer school, like our high school summer breaks, you know, we'd go tour up to play Tom Fest and, or go do little loops to Texas and play with, you know, different bands in the scene. And I think, you know, looking back on all that stuff, and how much, I mean, we ended up, you know, then signing to Tooth and Nail and getting so connected with all that, this new chapter of Tooth and Nail bands coming in at that time that were so similar to how our scenes that came up, you know? And so, yeah, this, I think this album, and I think most of the music, or all the music I make, I want to just like put it out to collaborate with like all of the scene, I guess, all of the bands and friends. And so I'm not even looking at these songs as like everyone that should be involved, that there's like more people that should be involved from like our whole history of, but yeah, definitely, you know, having Josh from Dogwood, that was one of the earlier bands that we were playing with. Early memories with like Frito Boat and, you know, Reliant K and Bill Powers on the album, you know, just always looked up to him when I was young. And
just going too fast. Let's just start with Dogwood and Josh. Tell me about what is special about Josh Kimble.
Oh, Josh is, well, if you know Josh, just one of the sweetest, like coolest, creative people. We've connected so much throughout the years. Like he had some family, I think, that is from our area. So when I was really young, like I said, we were playing shows, a couple of kind of like festival type shows that we would play with like a bunch of bands, and Dogwood, he was just always so cool to us. You know, we were so young back then. And I think one of like our first shows, he like had me sing, you know, on the song, like put the mic out, just like was always so cool to us. And so me and Josh have just been, we've been friends for a long time. We've stayed really connected and have talked about working on like collaborating on music, you know, and other things. Like we collaborate on, I have like a restaurant that he kind of helped me do the food concept for, you know, like we collaborate on a lot of things. And, so it really made sense like to have him on a bunch of these songs.
And is that that's Cheese? How did you say the name is Cheese of Nazareth?
That's
not it.
No,
that's not the restaurant collaboration. No, I heard you talk about that.
that was a spoof, I shouldn't have given away that that was a joke, but they do that on their podcast.
Okay. Right? Well, they got me. I thought that was kind of crazy. But then no. You said Josh Kimball. I was like, was that what that was? But no, what did you do with Josh? A restaurant collab. That's cool.
Well, yeah, it's like, the restaurant's called Pig Iron, but he just kind of helped early on giving us advice and came up and did like a tasting with us. And
awesome.
Yeah. He's great. But yeah,
he gets it for sure. He's really, really fun. I really like Josh.
So creative, just like such an overall creative guy, like, you know, someone that like pairs music with his food. And so anyways, getting him involved was just like so fun.
How'd you do this song with him? This is the one that is called Trust Me. It's number 4 on here. But what was the collaboration process on the song? Tell me about the song.
Yeah, so he's actually on 3 songs on the album. He's on Moving On Up, Trust Me, and COVID-19. Cool. Yeah. And Trust Me, you know, I just, with all of the songs, I think everyone involved, I just kind of said like, hey, here's a song. Here's kind of what I'm thinking, but do whatever you want. And so Josh thought it would be cool to kind of sing some stuff. And then, his wife had written this poem that was really cool. And so he read that at the end. And yeah, just kind of the song we had connected. Josh came up to town and we had connected. I started this kind of like, it's like an art zine. It's all about like, disconnecting from technology, connecting more with each other. It's called Buzzkill, like kill the buzz of your phone, you know? And so I was asking him like, hey, do you want to do some art for it? Or do you want to do some poetry or whatever? And then Trust Me, that song came about. So it was kind of connected to that conversation that we had had, because the song is kind of about the dangers of, you know, targeted performance marketing, because I work in marketing, and just how like technology really like impacts or has impacted humans and society and even like development and this concept of almost like the tech asking you to trust, like trust me, you know. So that's kind of I'm summarizing the song very quickly, but that's, I think we had already been talking about these things, you know, and he kind of resonates with these ideas and he sports the shirts and stuff for Buzzkill. So,
that's sweet.
Yeah. So he thought, oh, let's do this. Let's have kind of the, almost like a, like this AI tech thing is talking at the end of the song. Mm-hmm. And then disrupting with this like very profound. So that was cool to have him. And I love having Lisa involved too, his wife, that she wrote that. That's cool.
That's awesome. How about Bill Power? Why is he a legend?
Bill Power is, I mean, Blenderhead, obviously, like I just, as you know, consume like all Tooth and Nail, everything that they put out, all, you know. And so he just was always legendary to me. And then when we connected with Tooth and Nail, just has been the sweetest, coolest guy, always so encouraging of our music. Like that just meant so much to me because I've always looked up to him, you know? And so I reached out to him. I had been out to New York a couple times and tried to connect. And he had said like, hey, I have a pretty good recording setup if you ever like want to do some stuff. And so definitely, you know, wanted to get him involved. I thought that song Rollerblading was perfect for it. Cause you know, just more of like that pop punk sound that we Bitashi Wa started with. And then, you know, the subject matter, you know, we it's like me and my family through the pandemic, just all this crazy stuff happening in the world and so much like just fear and anxiety. And we just really got try to go out and start rollerblading and riding our bikes. And so that's like, I wanted it to feel like this. It's a delicate line to walk, you know, talking about the pandemic and everything. It's sensitive, you know? So I thought that tone felt right of almost just like playful, lighthearted with my kids, like rollerblading, like try to mm-hmm. just lean into like what we can like have joy in right now in the world, you know, like, which is it's simple, you know, just being with each other and laughing and rollerblading and, so having Bill on that, I thought just felt cool, you know, just like appropriate, bringing just his energy and perspective in on a song like that. It also was kind of like a check-in for me in a way, like, hey, is this cool? Like, is this song cool? Like, and making sure that it wasn't off, you know, in a way it's like, mm-hmm. is this, sometimes you have ideas as an artist and it's like, oh, it's a little... maybe that's not right or something, you know, like, so. Yeah,
that's part of it. It's like when you collaborate with people, you, instead of being locked in your room or just with your group of people, you all hear the same things as soon as somebody walks in the room, even if they don't say anything, you all of a sudden hear it different. Totally. Like that's part of it is just sharing an incomplete thing with a person is vulnerable. Can I trust Billy? Yes, I can. You know, or whatever that process is really means something. Totally. But what phase did you, how much did you direct or like integrate these people in the part of the songs where like, where's that handoff for you where you're comfortable sharing with these other people?
Well, early on, different people at different stages, I would say kind of like with, but try to get everyone hearing like early on the songs, like the demo stages, you know, and like, hey, I have this thought, you know, what would you be into doing something on this song? Definitely Nate Young and Steven probably got involved like the earliest. Nate was kind of like played drums on our last Eager Seas record, mine as well. And mm-hmm. he was actually planning on him playing on this album. So Nate really, like, I played him all the first demos, like really, really early, and he gave me a ton of notes and just like feedback. And I was planning on going out to Tampa and recording out there, and even talked to Casey Weisenbaker that used to be an Officer Negative about getting involved.
Oh, I know Casey. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was planning on, so we had talked about all that, and then the pandemic, you know, kind of hit. And so those early demos, even before I had like lyrics or anything, just like little rough ideas. Like I said, Nate was involved on. And
you've been friends with Nate and close with him since he was a 16-year-old, I guess, right? Since that Tooth and Nail tour.
Tooth and Nail tour, yeah.
Yeah. I remember getting pretty close to him pretty quickly. You know, because that's we had that same experience of like just being new on Tooth and Nail, going that Tooth and Nail tour. It was new for Nate, new for everybody, and then with further dropped off of that tour, and it was just us and me without you. Like that experience was, you know, one of the most. I have a lot of relationships from that tour. Yes. that are much stronger than many others.
Same, yeah. What an amazing tour! What an amazing. I'm so thankful for those friendships that we still have. I just saw the Me Without You guys a couple weeks ago. And just like, yeah, Nate has been an amazing friend since that tour. Yeah, we've stayed pretty close. He's like, you know, we relate on a lot of different things too outside of music. Like he has, his restaurant too. And, you know, just such a creative guy. He's such a cool creative partner. Like anytime I could do anything with Nate in any capacity, music, art, anything, like we just have a really similar, taste, perspective, you know, we connected like early on that tour. I think just like being a fan of similar music and everything, you know, like from back in the day. So yeah, it was cool. I wish he could have played on the album, but glad that he was like able to at least give me feedback and kind of work on the pre-production stuff with me. And then Steven on Zombie, you know, that was interesting because that was one of the songs that I actually didn't share with Nate until later on, until it was like pretty fleshed out. And that's when I had asked Steven if he wanted to sing on it and, you know, kind of collaborate on that. And that song, they actually wanted to be an Amber Lynn song. Zombie. So
really?
That one actually almost didn't even make the record. We were talking about them using it.
Wow. So it could have been an Anne Boleyn song instead of a Watashiwa song.
Totally. Yeah.
And how did it go down to decide? Like, how did it get to that? Like, it was your demo, then they liked it and they said, let me have it.
Well, kind of, yeah. yeah,
it's where they get all their songs. They rip them off of other artists.
No, I don't think they do that often. But yeah, they just I sent it to Steven and Nate, and then they were like, "Hey, could we use it? You know, would you mind if Amber Lynn has it, you know?" they were starting to make a new album. And so Kyle called me and we talked about it, you know, and I think that they explored it. And then I think they just went the sound on their new album. They went like kind of a different direction than those earlier conversations. Mm-hmm. So, and then
that would have been really cool though. Like, I mean, I don't know how
it would have been different. Yeah. The song definitely would have been a little different, but yeah, I think it could have been really cool. Maybe they'll cover it.
Yeah, maybe they could cover it or do that. Would be, I mean, that would be kind of cool if they just would do it as a B-side and cover it. Like, wouldn't that? I'd like to hear.
Yeah,
it.
I know. Me too.
You know, that'd be neat. That's remix. That's very cool to think of I'll mix it. If you just all they get is track it, I'll mix it.
Okay, I'll let Steven know.
Let him know. That's really cool. And then also from that same scene, and somebody I don't know that really well, but is always talked about so much, is Lewis from Gasoline Heart.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And so because the first time I met them was on the I don't know if I've told this story before, but on the second day of that Tooth and Nail tour, we were the opener on that tour.
Yes.
It was our first time being on tour, so we didn't even know how it worked or what time load-in is or have a tour manager or anything. We just kind of showed up dumb. And we were super late to the second show in Orlando, and the Jimmy Story, Amber Lynn's tour manager, told us, "Well, y'all can't play. You're late."
But no way.
The opening band already set up. So, but Jimmy managed the opening band. It was Gasoline Heart, and since we were late, he said, "Go ahead and just set up, and I'm gonna kick Emery off for tonight." And so we came, and he was like, "You're not gonna get to play." We had to call Tooth and Nail, and then they had to call him, and then they had to move Gasoline Heart stuff off the stage, and then put Emery stuff on stage.
I vaguely remember that, or
something like that. Because that stage and the social's really little.
It
was a problem, but it was like, oh yeah, whatever. But other than that, I just know Lewis was always around. I saw him at Cornerstone a little bit, but never had the chance to hang out. But tell me about why it makes that guy so special, because so many people, you know, talk about him a lot.
Totally. Yeah, Lewis. One of our first tours early on with Watashiwa was with The Kick, which was Lewis's old band, you know.
Oh, that was it. It was The Kick that was on that day. Gasoline Heart, but Lewis from Gasoline Heart's band, The Kick. That was exactly right. That's it.
And, you know, I had been introduced to Lewis through a friend, mutual friend. And we had actually met like on the phone before I had ever met him in real life. And he was just, I think we're so similar, but so different that it's like, he just is like, he quickly became like such a dear friend, like someone that I could be like really, really open and vulnerable with and kind of talk about things honestly with. He has this way about him that's like, he's so like loving and empathetic, but also mm-hmm. just honest and like blunt, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of like New York. Anyways, that first tour that we did with them, I mean, we really, really became good friends and we've stayed good friends. We've gone through similar things in life. We've both gone through divorces at similar times. And so it's just kind of shared a lot of like similar, I think we got remarried even like months apart from each other, you know, like we both are celebrating, I think like our 10-year anniversary this year. And we just have a lot of things to, over the years that have kind of kept us relating and talking. And I was working a lot in New York too, for my job, like doing marketing stuff with realtor.com. And so I would connect with him a lot whenever I would go out there. Over the years, we've always collaborated too, you know, like we've on almost every music project in some way we've collaborated. I've done their album artwork and sang on their songs and he sang on my songs. Let me prepare you actually, the song that he's on, I sing the same lyrics on one of his songs that he sings on my on this wow. song, which is like a little hidden thing that I don't think anyone will pick up on.
Oh, they'll take your money from you. I want you clearly to really understand this. They'll watch you leave. You'll give your money to them. They'll let you do it for the thrill of it. But don't let it kill you.
We really understand. We'll watch you bleed.
We've always just kind of had that connection. I think both mutually respect each other's music and songwriting. Lewis also, like when I was playing with MXPX, I got him, you know, kind of like I think we one night at Cornerstone, we all hung out and quickly, you know, they became really good friends with Lewis too. And I think he came out on one of the tours that we did, like doing merch when I was playing with MXPX. So just have had a lot of like time with Lewis over the years. He's one of my dearest friends, honestly, like just, he's so cool. And, yeah, definitely we'll keep collaborating, you know, for a long time.
Let's pivot on the MXPX mention and talk about one of the greatest legends around, Mike Herrera, and your closeness to him. I mean, he's not on the record, I don't think. You didn't do anything.
No,
But he's somebody that you've been up close with in a collaborative way. And I mean, that spot of you becoming the MXPX guitarist, I mean, that's the dream spot, you know, like there's this 3-piece band and how many people wanted to be, you know, then be that you've had time to spend with him. What, when you reflect on the time spent there, what is special about Mike as a collaborator or whatever it is?
Mike, I mean, I feel like I'm like, you know, a lot of ways, like a product of MXPX, you know, like my music is a lot of a reflection of their music. You know, they're probably the most influential band on me. You know, I learned to play guitar to them and having those kind of like that dynamic shift to then playing with them and, you know, doing their album artwork and creatively. I mean, I was like working on video, some of my first like video production work with them, editing, you know, like filming and editing with Mike. And we've had a really cool creative connection, similar kind of like, you know, he's he's been almost like a brother in a lot of ways, like taking me under his wing and showing me a lot of things, you know, whether it be with music, songwriting, production, recording, all kinds of creative things, you know.
Even he's a real like, unicorn, because like he's play, you know, he can play with Goldfinger or do his own thing,
and totally.
You know, he can just do. I mean, he. But is he easy to like work with in that way? Like when you're doing, like when you're in there doing the songs and stuff, what does that feel like to work with him? What's the style there like of jamming together?
Well, I think, like I said, having that, I was so influenced by them. It's almost like there's a language that we can understand each other really easily in, you know, and even just like when we sing together and stuff, like it's like we have similar tendencies, you know, like similar the way we write songs. And so, yeah, I would have loved to have Mike involved on this album, but like you said, he is doing a lot. He was playing, especially this last, you know, without bands being able to tour and stuff, you know, he was busy doing other stuff to try to, so he, unfortunately he's not on this album. I think it's one of the only albums he's not on of mine, but, but he's been, I mean, he's been so encouraging. I'm actually going to go on his podcast soon. We talked about trying to do even like a little meetup but yeah, I mean, over the years, like Mike creatively, musically has been so inspirational and like, just taught me so much. Like I said, spending time, we recorded a lot up in his, you know, up in the Bremerton studio. I think getting that time playing with them, I just absorbed so much. It really like changed so much how I saw music from that experience, you know.
That's fascinating, the idea that you have these like if you're learning the same stuff, like if you're copying Mike's style when you learn to play guitar, that pays off later in all these nonverbal ways we have to describe and talk. Like you're just like you have these built-in things. And so if you think of all the like Tooth and Nail kids out there, like think of the influence that Mike Carrera really has had, if you think about it. Because if even in 2004, if we're on the Tooth and Nail tour, you would have had like Joey from Amberlin and Mike from Me Without You and all these people and playing these different styles of music from you, all of which learned to play by copying Mike Carrera and stuff.
Yeah,
and then they've
totally,
come out with these other expressions. Like Joey from Amberlin can play all the Zayo songs and all the MX, but he can play everything.
Yeah.
And so, but yet the music comes out different all of a sudden. But that even shows you, well, that's why this music works together, because it does have stuff in common, even though its expressions are very different. And then you zoom forward in time, and then those same people are collaborating again together now. Like, that's kind of poetic almost, you know what I mean? Then all back together and doing stuff like making songs together. And,
it's so cool. Yeah, and it's like, I think that when you get to that level of mutual respect where you can like absorb, like I have learned the same tools that maybe from studying, you know, like you said, MXPX or these different, you know, Zayo or whatever. But then you are able with all those tools to like almost form new tools that then those, that's amazing. When then a Mike Carrera can absorb something from my music, like that's like maybe inspiration or
yes,
and then the collaboration is just like back and forth where it's like just keeps blossoming. Common, and you know, it's pretty cool.
The tools that you're describing there are probably even more specifically, you could call them languages.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because then now there's a common language, but you could never verbalize it all, but yet it's shared and known. So there's a vocabulary to it and things that are in and out of it that can then be intermixed like a language tools, musical language.
Yeah. I forget the name of the movie. It's about the kind of like Laurel Canyon movement in like the 60s with like where a bunch of artists and musicians kind of moved to the same area in Hollywood up in Laurel Canyon. And they were all just kind of like people that really respected each other and maybe were inspired by each other, but then being in this like close living whereas they were just constantly pushing each other to like new. And that's when all this new music and new sounds came out. But it's interesting. I think about that, like our heroes, like MXPX or whatever, when we're getting to this place now of like collaborating and pushing each other further and further, it's kind of, it can kind of feel similar to that idea, you know?
Yeah, because it's this long-term thing. It's like some people go, oh, there was this thing or this genre, or this moment where it popped in the mainstream or had its, you know, commercial peak or whatever. But it's a really long process, but it kicks off with that critical mass of density of mutual respect or talent and just opportunities like Billy Power getting VFW halls just so that our church in Medford having just to get the interactions, the creative collaborative interactions begin to happen. And the more dense they become, and then the more skilled they get, and then the more start to share language and history, then there's just more, it becomes more and more fertile. So it's like a reactor almost. We had to have a certain amount of density of it. And so all the people that contribute to open their homes and basements and all the supportive parents, like that's, it's all one really long thing.
Exactly.
It's open-ended still, you know?
Yeah. And it's still like, it's that, I look at it like we talked about in the beginning, like it's just happening. And I'm just so thankful that we're part of it. You know, it's like, it's so cool, you know?
That's awesome. That's why, and we'll talk about more songs too, but that just that whole feeling and is what Labeled Fest is about to me. So having you do working in the visual art and stuff on that, it's just when I was thinking about these, like what bands could be on it, the idea just started growing. And instead of talking to booking agents and stuff like that, I just said, I'll just text around and see. I've got some dates on hold. I wonder who would want to do stuff. And I start texting people who have been on the podcast or whoever want to be involved. And all of a sudden, it just starts to come together really, really quickly and easily because the trust is high and stuff like that. So the ideas just kind of came. But you were one of the people I was thinking. I was like, man, that Tooth and Nail Tour, that's such a special thing. Watashi Wa's doing stuff. They've got to be a part of this anyway. And then that was already making sense. And at some point I was thinking, how are we going to get these graphics and creative stuff done? I'm not able to do that. And it just hit me. It's like, oh, I bet Seth could help. And it's like, as soon as I started talking to him, it's like, this is going to be so easy because you already understand it all. And so you and Joel,
Joel's amazing. Yeah.
Is, you know, having the two of you guys on that, it's just been incredible. So like,
Thanks, but
it's really nice to to have people with the shared understanding because it just makes everything so easy and smooth. So,
yeah, well, this is such an exciting concept. And like, so much of what we're talking about too, of like this community kind of coming together again in a way, you know, it's like people are so excited about live music right now. I think we're all ready for that. And the excitement, I think for it made sense, I think, for like all of us to connect, you know, on this. And I'm so excited. We feel like just so honored to, you know, to be part of the mix. And, but that, like you said, that tour back in the day, the Tooth and Nail Tour was something that we have these friendships and collaborations and, we're sharing life together still from that. And I think the people that came to the shows are too, in a way, you know, so I'm just so excited about, it's like, it feels like a little bit like our garden has grown into this beautiful thing. And then we're like going to revisit it or something after all this time. It's like, okay, this is going to be really cool. And I'm excited to see where Labeled Fest goes. Cause I think, even in the future, bringing in more scenes and more of these communities and movements and, these labels that, help create these, like you're talking about, these little, like energy movements or whatever. I forget that. what did you say? I forget the way you described it was better, but
I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, but I'm just so excited. I think it's going to be such a cool tour. Doing the artwork has been, it's like you said, it's, we all have, we're all cut from like the same cloth in a way. We have this, similar taste and perspective, and we get what the scene felt like, you know? So,
It seems like a related skill to me that the role, the way you collaborate with musicians, then being a creative director, and you've done all kind of creative different things and corporate things, and it's a leadership quality. And is it? I just struggle entirely with almost everything visual, so I just don't understand that world. I'm an audio focused person, you know. But the people that have both skills and the visual, is it similar to being a conductor? To be a creative director? Like, how are you? Like, I can understand being a composer and a conductor where you're getting the best out of a bunch of people, but you have this leadership in the graphics to understand the brand and the thing and the people and direct people and also accomplish work. Is it feel like a conductor like thing? Like, how can I understand?
Totally. Yeah.
How is it the same as what you do musically?
It's very similar to conducting. Yeah. Or composing, you know, like you're looking at, you know, like I love people, and I believe that all people in some way are like creative, you know, have creative, or I think we're made in the image of, you know, the creator. And so we have this like innate, and I think when you can start to look at like, okay, what is this person's, perspective and talent, and what makes them tick, and what's their skill set, you know, and then being able to like put people together with their skill sets and know, okay, this is the goal. This is the business goal. This is what we're trying to, you know, accomplish. And this is the best team or the best way to with these skill sets, with these people, with these personalities, with these perspectives. I love it because people are, you know, you can find all these different people with different personalities that do different things, like developers, coders, video editors, you know, designers, artists, and put together these people in a way that it's like accomplishes something bigger than those individuals on their own, you know, just like a song, just like a conductor would take like a violin player and all these different people, put them together so yeah, it's very similar. Writing music is similar too. It's like, it's like you're taking value of, oh, this is what this texture is, or this sound, or this is what this, and you're putting it all together to make sense to like a bigger composition. So it takes that design and focus of like understanding, okay, what does the bass do that's different than the guitar? Like and really studying that. And that's a lot of, I guess, what I do is just, it's related to understanding people, understanding who they are and what their talents are, what their passions are, and putting together the right people to like accomplish the goal. In this case, like a lot of it is like banner ads and emails and like, you know, whatever, Facebook ads. But you know, you can take that all the way up to like making a movie with someone or a commercial, or, you know, down to something as simple as like a banner ad or whatever. But that team of people that thought about, okay, what's the messaging? What's the imagery? What's the art direction? What's the branding? How do we, you know, and keeping everything intact to like keep that song beautiful, you know. And
yeah, but seeing that the whole is the skill there, because I've never had success in the area. Like with music, I know what everybody's supposed to. It's easy for whatever reason. But when I think about that other stuff, it's like, well, you got to hire this person and get that person. You got to tell everybody what to do. But I don't, you know, to get them to be in a shared understanding of. It's not just like, oh, you got to get this done or get this done or get the art done. It's like a symphony of other people that all are sharing the vision. You know what I mean? Something about that is what makes it work, that it's all connected.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and that's different from the same in the visual arts, the same. There's there's this more common thing where you think, oh, the designer is this visual genius who simply speaks it into perfection versus that team approach that you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've seen with me and Joel, there's the process of back and forth and collaboration, and yeah, but it's cool. I love just creating in general. And, it's nice to, when you can kind of have things that you learn even from one creative tool like music, and then you can bring into other something else. Like, you know, for me, directing people or connecting people for this stuff. I've learned a lot from even like being in the band and directing, you know, like what your vision is for like the song or bringing those songs to life live, you know, and sounding the same as they do on the record. It takes time and direction, you know, like working with different people. So I definitely learned it, you know, a lot from this world, the music world. But yeah, I'm excited to be working on this label, fest stuff. It's been fun.
Thank you. I thought it's been great so far, and plenty more to do and plenty to come out of it that we don't even know about it yet. So that's awesome. Let's talk about a couple more of these songs and at least Tooth and Nail adjacent people that I find fascinating. One, Joel from Noise Ratchet. Now, Noise Ratchet was this band that I just have, you can't believe how big of a Noise Ratchet fan I am or have been, you know, at some points when I first discovered them was at Tom Fest. And I didn't really understand, it was a militia group band that I had heard of or whatever, but at Tom Fest, I saw them and I just thought it was one of the most powerful performances I've ever seen.
Totally.
Because I had no idea what it was going to be, and it just blew me away. It was like them at their probably peak, and in that environment or whatever it was. And then they didn't last or whatever, but I never hung out with them or maybe said hey to them before, but I never had any chance to be around them. But what's tell me about Noise Ratchet. Who were they to you and work with Joel now?
Yeah, I love, man, those are my homies. We like have so many memories, early memories of Wetashua, just playing shows with Noise Ratchet. here and down in San Diego. And really stayed, you know, I became really good friends with them through just playing shows and touring, and stayed connected, I think, in our friend groups, you know, like Noise Ratchet made an amazing record, and they kind of fizzled out because I think like a label, like some stuff, I can't remember now, but like label stuff or Rick Rubin, you know.
But Rick Rubin picked them. Like, is it? Am I understanding this right? Because to me, this is important. If so, is Rick Rubin found this group, Noise Ratchet, and was thinking this is the special thing where Christianity meets this heavy sound, and it's like whatever, something about that fascinated of what we do fascinated Rick Rubin, and
totally.
He chose Noise Ratchet to try to pull.
Yeah, pull. That,
and,
yeah.
And it didn't, yeah. I mean, I don't know what happened. I don't know the story, but is there, what else do you know about that?
I don't know much about, see, I remember hearing that album. I remember like being down there hanging out when they were recording. They had like an apartment down in LA that they were hanging out at. And I was hanging out down there with them. I remember like going to the rehearsals, and we actually rehearsed a little bit like, anyways, so that, all I remember is they made that album and it sounded great. And then there was like some thing with Rick Rubin not being too present, or I don't know. I think it just, something happened, but they were amazing.
But that
band.
Killed the band. I mean, they didn't have, I just don't understand. It seemed
after that they did The Life, which was kind of like, a different sound, same guys, Joel was still singing. And then shortly after that, Delta Spirit, you know, with Matt singing. So Brandon and John from Noise Ratchet were doing, you know, and they're still doing Delta Spirit. I love those. Like I said, we just have so much history of like early shows and just like us formulating our sound and everything. And they were always such a, like, they loved, they actually introduced our music to Militia Group, because Militia Group was like, oh, Betty Rocket, they're stupid, like all they're not cool. And I think John was like, no, you got to hear Wetashua, this record, you know, what's in the way. And that's when we got connected with Militia Group and a bunch of bands, where Noise Ratchet was just like advocating for us. They thought we were so cool. I remember like Joel just always like, even when we play with them, he would just be like, Natasha is so good. We love them. Like he was, they were just so kind and encouraging to us. And, you know, like I said, we were pretty young. So Joel, there's more songs too. I'm planning on doing with Joel. And, I hope that Noise Ratchet, you know, does a little thing too. I would love to do a little something with them. We even like, we're talking about like, oh, we should try to do a little tour or something, you know, with Tashua and Noise Ratchet. It would be so cool.
Would you ask them if they would play the San Diego date and
play yeah, the fest or him. Something? Yeah, I'll
you
ask
know?
Him.
I mean, yeah. If they were going to do a reunion, it should be a yes. big deal. But like, you know, yes. whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, but yeah, it's so cool having Joel on that song. It was in a pinch too. Like really, I sent him the song kind of, there's another song on the next album that I've been thinking about with Joel, like his voice and everything. And so originally we had tracked it for this album, this other song, but you know, kind of last minute, I was like, I think save that for the next album. So I sent Joel this other song. Matt had already sang on it, from Reliant K, and Joel had this great idea, added, you know, this counter melody and this cool harmony. And it totally changed the feeling for me of the song. Like the chorus just sounds so cool and big now. And, but yeah, I love Joel. He's such a great, great guy. I'm glad that we're still connected.
You're nailing all these. Cause now we just go straight to Matt Thiessen here. And this will be, this will be the last one we do today, but I know there's some other guys on the record, Taylor from Briar Tone, Logan from Frito Boat, and Jeremy from Noggin Toboggan. You listed are all, you know, on there too, but let's talk about Matt Thiessen a little bit. How did you, get involved with him and is somebody you've known? Because, you know, he's got to be the just top of the heap of talent out there in this scene.
Oh, as
a writer, composer,
singer,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Performer, just out,
he's insane,
just off the charts in every way.
Yeah. He's insane. I'm so like thankful to know Matt. I think we met the first time we played with Tashiwa and Reliant K, like Spirit West Coast or something back in the day. And just kind of like, you know, he did express early on just appreciation for the music to us. And like, back then really loved their music. And so it was just a quick, easy.
Did you do a tour with Reliant K?
No, we just kind of would play. I think we played like a handful of shows with them. And so when we'd see each other, it'd be like, oh, cool. And then when I started playing with MXPX, we toured together with Reliant K. And that was when we probably became, you know, like friends, like good friends. Spent a lot of time on Warped Tour together.
That's right.
Yeah, they came through a couple times, I think, in town, and I ran into him like in LA and Nashville, you know, just different places over the years. We've just always kind of stayed connected. He's someone that, like you said, is just a musical just force, you know, like he's just so he's so talented, creative, like just being around him, you just feel like, oh, I can pick up what's going on here, you know, the talent level and like music's just kind of coming out of him, creativity, just like very one of those guys too, like so smart and clever and witty, like he's just like always like, you know, has like the wittiest jokes and, you know, like, so.
He and Aaron Sprinkle both have a shared quality in that way. They're both like, they're going to be funny. Also, and it feels like the way that they're funny is related to the way that they are just pulling these musical ideas. Like they're on the frequency of it, and,
totally,
and they're just tuned into it. But
yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah, I love Matt. I mean, he was like, you know, similar thing to the other songs. I just sent in the songs like, hey, if any of these you want to sing on, let me know. And so, and I just told him like, whatever you want to do. The harmony he did on How Will We Live was so interesting. And like one of those things, like it's so matte, like it's so distinctive to like a melody, harmony melody that only he would do. And I hope that people like pick that up. Like it totally changed the sound of the song for me and like the feel of it. And that's, I think, what was like exciting. Those little moments on the album were like, that's what made it for me, of just like getting stuff in it, feeling like, okay, this collaboration changed that song for so much more than it could have been without it, you know, so much better, so much, just feels so much. So yeah. And then on Sometime too, just like having him sing that second verse and kind of like soften it a little. I think that really made it like, I think I had even a line on there that when I sang it, it just didn't come across the right way. I almost like cringed when I would hear myself sing it, you know, not really, but then when I heard him do it, it's just like the way that he sang and just what he does with his voice and everything. It's just so specific to him, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm so honored to have him on those tracks. And just like I said, have been connected over the years, like someone that constantly is inspiring me when I listen to the music and kind of like helping me rethink my own music. And yeah, just, it's like that sharpening feeling of like someone that makes you better, and a friendship, a creative, like musical friendship that kind of like pushes you. And it's always like, yeah, he's just always an inspiration, you know?
Yeah. That mutually inspired thing, I guess, is the theme here that keeps going, that pays dividends. You know, if you can respect somebody and they can respect you. So there's a validation in that. You go, but I'm a fan of you. You go, yeah, but I'm a fan of you. But yeah, but you're before me, but it doesn't matter. But if it's like, if you can get grounded in that, it can give you a great confidence that you might not otherwise have. You know, it's not like about who you know so much, but there's a confidence that can give you when you, especially when you're doing vulnerable or creative things, that's really useful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's like, it makes everything really more powerful too, when you can like find that, for the fans. I think people, there's something that the way that the fans receive it almost is different too. You know, it's like, oh, that reference point that I have here is also connected here. And so, yeah, it's cool. I love it.
That's great. Well, Seth, you've been a part of so many different things that are just, you know, go off in so many different ways. And I just respect the way that you integrate with different people and different things across time, like, whether it's Eager Seas or a pivot here or change this or, you keep doing different things with different people in different ways, and that just keeps on rolling. So that flexibility is really been a cool thing to see. And this record's just a really good experiment in that. And again, I think the sound of it is a very, it gives it its own unique sound or genre or something that fits here in this whole scene. But it's also, it's a unique new sound, I think. So I think that's, you know, very notable and very cool to hear like how it all has been put together and how you see the creation process of it.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's thank you for like talking and spending the time with me talking through all this. It's cool to like reflect on it. I don't get a lot of time to actually like slow down and think about some of these things. So it's pretty cool. I'm so thankful for this album, the way it came together, everyone involved. It just feels like all like an honor, you know? And I think the journey over the years that's led to kind of like being back with Wetashiwa and all of this, like almost like celebrating the amazing, you know, scene or culture that we all kind of share in, that's that is a big part of this album, is just like that. So all of this, like the time we're in, the label fest, the new music coming out, everyone kind of like, it feels like a family reunion or something.
That's cool. Yeah, that's great. And so what do you have, other stuff going, other tour dates other than Labeled Fest?
Not yet. If any bands want a tour, let's do it. We are doing a Furnace Fest.
That's right.
So that'll be a big, festival that we're doing. We're so excited about in September. So we'll probably do some touring around that. And then, like I said, if anyone wants to tour, let us know. We want to get out there. We want to play new songs and old songs. So,
and Labeled then, Fest dates are West Coast in August, right?
In August. Yep. Mm-hmm. So excited about that. Yeah. And those are all the ticket sales are up now. So
yes,
people should go check those out. So the album comes out May 20th. People Like People. Again, that's the name. We're so excited. We got it on CD and cassette.
Nice.
I love cassette. That takes us back too, and some cool merch and stuff. So yeah, check it out. People Like People. It's coming out on Tooth and Nail Records, May 20th. So we're really excited.
Awesome. Well, I'll be checking it out and giving some previews of some of these songs here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Labeled. My name is Joel, and I'm from Nashville, and I've been a supporting member of Labeled since the beginning. A favorite song of mine is from a sampler from the Songs from the Penalty Box Volume 2. It was a simple sampler I think my mom got at a Berean Christian bookstore, and A Fall Farewell from Zayo is on that album. There's a breakdown about a minute into that song that really defined what heavy music was for me through high school and junior high, and so yeah, that song for sure stands out. Labeled is produced by Matt Carter and Knucklebreaker Productions at Compound 3 Recordings. Editing and sound designs by Seth Thompson. Editorial oversight by Jim Worthen and Adam Scatula. Brand and design direction is by me, Joel Buechelman, and our production manager is Katie Franson. Executive producers Brandon Ebel and Matt Carter, and additional support from Marshall Frymoth, Tyson Paoletti, and Anna Roslowski. Thanks, and see you next time. Yeah.